All right, time to talk now from the State House with the Massachusetts State Senate Minority Leader, Bruce Tarr, former student, good friend, good man, and actually lives right down the street from me. So, Senator Tarr, welcome back to MSO.
Hey, Rick, it's great to be back with you, and it's true, we are connected in so many ways, and I'm grateful for all of those ways, so thank you.
As am I, and you know I sing your praises all the time, Senator, but let's get started to the business. You've mentioned many times about the informal session of the legislature, but that the legislature still gets things done. And I wonder, as we approach the end of the year, if you might comment on what's left, because we got two or three weeks left before we start 2023.
We do, and really, Rick, the legislature continues in session until roughly the first Tuesday of January. So there's a little bit of time left to go. We continue to meet in informal sessions at least twice a week, and we've talked about this a lot. Informal sessions are sessions where we usually conduct sort of routine, non-controversial business. And in fact, we will be in informal sessions until the end of this legislative session on that first Tuesday in January. So there is no opportunity presently to have a formal session. And that leaves a lot of bills on the table that folks would like to move that might otherwise be reserved for a formal session. And what I wanted to touch on is just to let people know that there are attempts to move a number of those bills. A lot of them are in the Senate Committee on Ways and Means. And when I last looked at the bills that are in that committee, the number is almost 600. Right? So there are a lot of bills in that committee. But that's not unusual because it's one of the final stops for most bills before they go to the floor of the Senate. So right now, in these remaining days of the session, we are looking to see if we can find consensus on a number of those bills so that we could move them and get them to the governor's desk in the informal session. And you might ask, what are some of those? And one that's been getting a particular amount of attention lately is a bill that I'm a sponsor of, and I think it's very important, and it actually has to do with the theft of catalytic converters, which are a component of the exhaust system in all of our vehicles. They've been required for a number of years to meet the standards of the Clean Air Act and other environmental standards. And they essentially try to reduce and do reduce carbon emissions in all of our cars and all of our trucks. And there has been a wave of theft of those catalytic converters all across the state, because they contain precious metals. Oftentimes, they actually contain platinum. And there's been a wave of thieves using a battery-powered reciprocating saw, Sawzall, as some people might call it, stealing them. And it creates a huge problem for the victim of that theft. Number one, their vehicle becomes inoperable. Number two, if someone does try to operate their vehicle without the catalytic converter, it's terrible for the environment because now the emissions are not being scrubbed. And it's also a financial hardship. It can cost $2,000 or $3,000 to replace one or more catalytic converters. And so it is something that we want to try to do something about. And it's already illegal to steal a catalytic converter, just as it is illegal to steal anything for that matter. But the bill that's before us is attempting to create a better toolkit for tracing the sale of them so that folks aren't able to sell as easily illegally gotten catalytic converters. Mm-hmm. And so it creates reporting rules for the people that might buy them as scrap metal dealers and others so that there's a traceability to the catalytic converters that are being sold, many of which are the product of ill-gotten gain. So that's an example, Rick, of a bill that I think is very important and very timely because particularly with supply chain issues, if you're the victim of this kind of theft, and you seek to have your vehicle repaired, it may take a while to be able to get a new one or a replacement catalytic converter. So something that may seem a little bit unusual, but is becoming a very mainstream issue.
I'm glad you pointed that out because I always wondered about what the benefit was of stealing a catalytic converter. Now, what does it take an informal session, Senator Tarr, to get that bill passed? What has to be done?
Importantly, Rick, the bill has already moved through the House, and so now it's before us in the Senate, and what has to happen is the Ways and Means Committee needs to continue vetting the bill and ensuring that it's properly drafted. And the most important part of what needs to happen in an informal session is we need to have consensus. Because if the bill is reported out of the Committee on Ways and Means and comes to the floor, anyone can object to it being taken up. And, of course, that wouldn't be a very good use of our time. And so we're trying to make sure that we can get consensus rather than bringing a bill to the floor that someone's going to find objectionable. If we can find that consensus, then we'd need to move it through the Senate to engrossment, the step before final passage, send it back to the House for the last step, enactment, and then it would come to us for enactment before it went to the governor. So there's a few steps here, but I'm still holding out hope, as are many people, that we can get this bill passed.
I have to play devil's advocate here. What does it take? What would it take the manufacturers of catalytic converters to come up with a system that you're seeking?
Well, it's actually not putting a burden on them at this point. This is more of a burden on those who would purchase them in the secondary markets. Scrap metal dealers, for instance, would have to ensure that the person seeking to sell the catalytic converter has proper ownership of it. So they would record the person's license and their information, their address. They would record the license plate of the vehicle that they used to drive to the scrap metal dealer, and they would keep good records so that if there was a question about the sale of that particular catalytic converter, it could be traced. So again, this isn't about increasing penalties or even creating penalties because they exist. This is more about record keeping.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be an administrative burden on scrap metal dealers,
but
a lot of this kind of record keeping they already do for their own protection.
So it's just adding a database, essentially.
Exactly. Now, there are other steps that have been taken. About half the states actually have laws to deal with this particular issue. And when you talk about manufacturers, one thing that's being discussed, but this bill does not include this measure, would be to require manufacturers to imprint the catalytic converter with a unique serial number, either the serial number of the vehicle, the VIN number, or some other unique identification that could not be easily removed, making it harder to illegally sell the catalytic converter in the stream of commerce if it was stolen.
You know, I wonder if you would have thought about that years ago in math class, because 21st century, man, it's getting a little overwhelming for me, I'll tell you. My goodness. Lordy.
Well, you know, Rick, VIN numbers have been around for a very long time, and
right.
They're sort of the backbone of accountability for motor vehicles.
Yep.
And it's kind of a simple step to do it, but being able to database that information, that's something that we probably wouldn't have thought about when you were in the front of the classroom and I was in a chair in the classroom so many years ago.
Not only that, but I didn't even, and still don't even know what the hell a catalytic converter is, but that's my problem. Oh, God. Well, good luck with that. I know I understand what you said it does, but my goodness gracious. Lordy, I used to be able to tune up a six-cylinder, a straight six. I don't even know where the spark plugs are now. So,
well, sometimes it's a little hard to find them, but essentially a catalytic converter using a honeycomb structure of various metals, oftentimes precious metals, essentially catalyzes exhaust fumes and reduces some of the more harmful things in the exhaust fumes to things like water and other gaseous byproducts that are more environmentally benign than the products that initially come out of the combustion process. So how's that?
It's fantastic, man. I mean, you get your physics in there, your math in there, and chemistry. I'm very impressed, Senator. Plus, certainly your sociology is on point. Fantastic. Well, good luck with that. I certainly hope that gets passed in this session. If we could, I'd like to ask you, I guess from a personal standpoint, your outlook on the outgoing administration of Lieutenant Governor Polito and Governor Baker and your relationship with them and how you view their administration, because I've heard time and time again that certainly Governor Baker is among, if not the most popular governor in the country, and he certainly has taken some really amazing stands politically, and also the incoming administration of Maura Healey and Kim Driscoll, because you're well acquainted with both of them.
I am, Rick. And it's a very good question. And I would say that with regard to most of the polling we've seen throughout the governor's administration, Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito, Governor Baker has consistently been in the top three in terms of the most popular governors in America. And most often, he has been the most popular governor in America. And I think that's for a number of reasons, the first of which is their focus has been on managing state government and understanding the problems that state government has to address, and also understanding the issues that are facing folks all across the Commonwealth. And while they certainly have philosophical principles, Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito have not allowed themselves to give in to the temptation of having endless ideological debates that don't produce results and don't enable them to find solutions to the issues that we all need to have them address. They've had a very practical approach. And that isn't to say that ideology isn't important. It certainly isn't to say that principles aren't important. They both are. But they've been able to integrate their perspectives into solutions that have helped make Massachusetts run very well for the most part. I mean, think about this, Rick. We are investing, and we've talked about this a lot on your show, we are investing a lot of money in a variety of different ways, trying to improve the healthcare system and education, public safety. And at the same time, while we're making those investments, the taxpayers of the Commonwealth just got approximately $3 billion in refunds. So I think they've done an outstanding job of managing the fiscal affairs of the Commonwealth. But, you know, managing state government is more than the fiscal state of the state. It's also about making sure that investments are made where they need to be made, that proper measures in terms of public policy are enacted. And that brings me to my second point. I think that Charlie Baker and Karen Polito understand one of the most important things about public service, and that is it's about relationships. And so they have established outstanding relationships, and in most cases, friendships with everyone in the House and the Senate, irrespective of party. And they have really helped people understand that their goal is when it's possible to be able to find common ground, to understand the other person's perspective, and see if there could be reasonable solutions. And those reasonable solutions have come forward in all kinds of legislation that I won't delve into here, mm-hmm. But it's also not just about legislation. It's about making sure that when folks have serious issues that need to be addressed, whether that be with COVID-19 or public health or transportation or public safety, that they've been responsive to those things. And really, Rick, when you think about it, this has been an unusual administration in that it's been tested from its earliest days. You remember the snow that paralyzed the MBTA when they were first coming into office. You remember the explosions, the gas explosions that happened in Lawrence and North Andover and Andover. Yep. You remember certainly all of the public health issues around COVID-19. And time and again, Charlie Baker and Karen Polito have stepped into the managerial role, and they've made decisions, some of which not everyone has agreed with, but they've made those decisions, and they've managed state government in a very good way.
Go ahead. Well, I just want to interrupt you for 1 second, Senator. And I think from my perspective, one of their greatest strengths that I have admired in my dotage here is their availability and their visibility. They're constantly in communities, and I think that is a tremendous strength of a person, of someone, you know, in their position.
There's no doubt about that, and one of the ways that's manifested is with something called the Community Compact Program, which was created by this administration and funded by the legislature to be able to sign compacts with the cities and towns in the state to understand what their priorities are, and by category to try to fund those priorities or at least provide financial assistance. And Lieutenant Governor Polito, who has managed that program, has been to every city and town in Massachusetts, and in many cases more than once, and has established that connectedness mm-hmm. between state government and municipal government, realizing that our partners in municipal government perform some of the most important functions and some of the functions that touch people the most in all of government in Massachusetts.
Well, as you said, that's making connections, and it's been very impressive. How do you see the incoming administration?
Well, the incoming administration, first and foremost, is led by Maura Healey, who has been the Attorney General. So she's coming into the role of governor, familiar with a wide range of the issues that the governor is going to have to deal with. And in many cases, she has dealt with them. She has dealt with public safety, certainly. She's dealt with crime. She's dealt with public health. She's dealt with educational issues. So she's coming into office with a beginning array of knowledge that is substantial. And certainly there'll be more learning to be done. But she certainly comes in with a good basic understanding of how our state government operates and what the role of the governor is in that operation. And, of course, with her partner, Kim Driscoll, we know that we have someone that understands municipal government and has run a city, the city of Salem, for many years and has confronted the challenges that municipal officials face, again, in performing the functions that I referenced a minute ago as being so important in the lives of people in Massachusetts. So if there's one way I could describe the incoming administration, it would be fairly well prepared to be able to deal with those issues. And, of course, because both Maura and Kim have had the yoke of responsibility on their shoulders in two different realms of government, they also understand the importance of working with people and building coalitions and trying to find ways forward for the issues that we face. So I think they're well prepared. I think they understand the value of relationships. And certainly it's not an easy task in these times where we have uncertainty around inflation and energy and continuing uncertainty around public health. It's certainly not easy, but they come to the table with a lot of skills and a lot of resourcefulness.
If only we had this Massachusetts model nationwide, and I know it's a big disparity between one party and the other in terms of representation in the legislature, but the way that people work together in the state house, at the state house, and administratively and legislatively, I think it's a model for the rest of the country.
I agree with you, Rick, and that isn't to say that we don't have our disagreements.
Exactly.
But I think the difference between government in Massachusetts and what we see in a number of other places around the country, including Washington, D.C., is that we can have those differences of opinion, we can have those disagreements, we can have those debates, but we don't allow them to paralyze the operations of state government. And large issues come before us in the House and the Senate and certainly in the executive branch. And again, even though we might not agree, progress is made and forward progress is made. And that's something that I think everyone should have a right to expect of their government.
Well, once again, thank you for the lesson in civics. I really appreciate it. And now we need to turn our attention to the season. As we all know, North Shore 104.9 is no longer, much to the benefit of MSO News Sports, I might say. we have benefited from it. Thank you very much. But certainly, Senator, one of the biggest attractions of North Shore 104.9 over the entire year is your toy drive. So what's the next genesis of that? What's the next generation?
Well, you know, Rick, I'm so glad you brought this up, and I want to begin by thanking Todd Tanger and the folks at North Shore 104.9, which retired from the airwaves this year. If you tune in 104.9 on your radio dial, you're still going to hear programming, but it is programming that, as I understand it, largely originates from California as part of a syndicate known as K-Love, which is a Christian-based broadcasting foundation. So 104.9 exists, but not in the same way that it existed for the many years in which we had the real honor and privilege of partnering with them to do good things for kids and families in the holiday season. But we had a choice to make when 104.9 ceased to exist as our broadcast partner, and I'm so grateful to them for the years that we did work together, whether or not to keep the mission and the spirit of the toy drive alive. And we had to think about that for a long time. But we all decided that we absolutely needed to keep that mission alive. And so we had to transition. session this year into a little bit different format, which is web-based. But I'm so pleased to say that KPN Web Design stepped up to the plate and did provide, on a volunteer basis, an incredible website that I hope folks are going to visit. Because when you go to that website, you will see not only a listing of all of the charities that we're working with, all the way stretching from Lynn to the New Hampshire border, you will find information about each of them. And if the charities themselves have a website, there's a link there that you can click on and go right to the charity's website and make a donation. You can also send them something in by postal mail. But there's a variety of charities, and depending on where you live, you can find one that's near you and that's serving your neighbors and you, for that matter. So that's part of the website. But the other part of the website, Rick, are interviews with folks that have historically been partners in the toy drive. And so over the last couple of weeks, I've been traveling around, as we often would be doing this time of year, and doing interviews with public officials and with local businesses. This morning I was in Lawrence, for instance, with the Merrimack Valley Chamber of Commerce and the United Way and the Boys and Girls Clubs of Haverhill. I was in this week in Ipswich with Ipswich Caring. Earlier in the toy drive, I had the opportunity to interview Sherry O'Reilly from Beaufort Hospitality Group and the folks from Action Incorporated. And so we are trying to keep the toy drive alive, and it's going fairly well. But, Rick, it's important to remember that there is a lot of need out there right now. And so far, we're lagging behind a little bit in donations, and it's something that's been happening around the state. But we can still do something about that, and it's not too late. So I'm going to share with you our Toy Drive website, which is www.NorthShoreHolidayToyDrive.org. And, Rick, I'll provide you with that information in written form, so hopefully you can share it with folks. But it's www.NorthShoreHolidayToyDrive.org.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that you'll be able to see on that site are performances from local performers, which have always been part of the toy drive. So as we're receiving those, we're posting them. And I encourage folks to check the site not only once, but frequently, because we're adding interviews all the time. And, in fact, tomorrow morning, I'll be with my friend, former state representative Bob Fennell, over at the Capitol Diner in Lynn. And Bob and I will be talking about the historic relationship that we've had in generating toys and contributions for charities in Lynn that help kids and families there. So we're doing the best we can. Things have changed, but one thing that we're not going to allow to change is the ability to help kids and families in need, and we're not going to change the ability of folks to partner with us to do that.
Iron fist in a velvet glove, relentless, tireless. Senator Tarr, you're absolutely amazing, and I know that this is probably, once it gets rolling, maybe it's even going to be bigger than it was at the radio station, hopefully.
Well, you know what? We're hoping, Rick. We had great years on the airwaves, first with WESX, who I know you had a connection to, as I did, and then with North Shore 104.9. But, again, the most important thing is the consistent theme of generosity and charity and support for our neighbors, and we're not going to let that go. And, Rick, I appreciate your assistance in helping us get the word out on MSO, because MSO is a great resource for all of us, and it's a place where we can go to get lots of important information. And I think this is a particularly important piece of information.
Thanks for the plug. I'm going to use that. I'm going to dub that off. All right. That's
no charge.
Thank you. Yeah, right. That is Massachusetts State Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.